Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next 2 hours, they're going to be the views of Ted Gunderson, who was formerly the FBI agent in charge of the Los Angeles office of the Federal Bureau of Investigation before he retired some years ago. Before we go on, I do want to mention that this Saturday I'm going to be talking at a conference that's going to be held in Northern California, just outside of Santa Rosa, and it's going to be an all-day conference. We're going to actually give a couple of talks, and then there are going to be the Master of Ceremonies in the evening. It's put on by the Eagle Forum of California. It's got a lot of great speakers there. Jerome Corsi, Phyllis Schlafly, Michael Shaw will be there. And if you're interested in going, the number is 707-539-8393. That's 707-539-8393. And I can assure you it's going to be a great program. Well, that is the background. Right now, let's get to Ted Gunderson, because, of course, I've known Ted for many years. He's one of those people who's given up his life in an effort to try to educate the American people about what's really going on in the world today. Ted, thanks very much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, thank you very much, and I don't feel like I've done a very good job based on what's happening and the general knowledge or no knowledge of the general public, so... But we have to keep plugging away. We have to keep working at it.
Well, our job is not to convince the whole population. Our job is to put the information out there, and I figure God's going to get the people who are supposed to listen, and those that don't listen, well, that's their problem. But our job is to put the truth out, and you've been doing that for a long time.
Doctor, I've been doing that since 1980, and I was in the FBI for some 27 years. And the time of retirement, as you mentioned, I was in charge of FBI Los Angeles Division. I had over 700 personnel under my command. I had a $22.5 million budget. I had 16 offices that I was responsible for, with men in each office. And I was, you know, I've always been, Dr. Stan, a flag waver, a Boy Scout, apple pie, Chevrolet, hot dog, and that sort of thing, baseball. And I still am. I still am. Believe me, I am. I love my country. And I became involved, of course, I wrote my own, as soon as I retired, I was asked to coordinate security for the Pan American Games in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and I went to San Juan, Puerto Rico in the summer of 79. We didn't have one act of terrorism down there, although there were four terrorist groups that were active on the island. I had 5,500 athletes from North and South America there. It was a great experience. And then I came back to Westwood, California, which is near the campus of UCLA. I opened my own private investigation firm, security consulting and what have you. And my first major investigation... Oh, and before I go into that, I was a consultant for Governor Jerry Brown in 1982. I was with the California Narcotic Authority as a consultant there. And in 1977, I was... honored as the Outstanding Law Enforcement Officer of America by the AFL-CIO Metal Trades Council. So I'm not some guy pushing a grocery cart looking for a recycling center, and that's created a problem for my adversaries and for the government. Do I hear music, Dr. Stan?
You do, but go right ahead. I'll get you off here. Don't you worry.
Okay. But so I... my first major investigation was the Dr. Jeffrey R. McDonald case. It's spelled M-A-C-D-O-N-A-L-D.
And of course, that was the Green Beret, a military officer, who was accused of killing his wife and put in prison. They put an innocent man in prison because, of course, they didn't want to admit that there was a satanic group out there. Government's done everything they could to cover up the satanic groups. We'll be back here in just a moment, right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Ted, go right ahead, because I think that a Jeffrey McDonald case is one of the most fascinating cases
Definitely.
That I've ever heard of.
Definitely. Go ahead. Not on the air right now, are we?
Here we are. We're on the air.
We're
not going to get any breaks this evening. We just talk right through the break.
Oh, okay. I thought that with the music we're going to have some commercials or what have you.
Well, we do. Then some people are hearing commercials and some people are hearing you talk, so you go right ahead.
Okay. Well, what happened, Dr. Stan, is I was asked to investigate the case. Dr. McDonald had been tried and convicted. Sentenced to 3 consecutive life sentences for the murder of his wife and 2 children. His wife was pregnant, and his children were 2.5 and 5.5. They were brutally murdered, numerous stab wounds and what have you. And Dr. McDonald said that he was laying on the couch in the family room, or actually the living room, is at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. He's a Green Beret doctor. And intruders came in, and there was a black man and 2 white males, and a female who stood over him over the couch. He was laying on the couch. He'd been watching Johnny Carson. And the female, Helena Stokely, I learned later, was chanting, "Acid is groovy, kill the pigs, acid is groovy, kill the pigs." And he fought them off as best he could. He said, "What are you doing here?" And they said they'd come in, they were looking for drugs. And he heard his wife in the background saying, Jeff, why are they doing this to me?" And he heard his children say, Daddy, help me, help me. And he was frantic. And he felt a sharp pain to his left side and lost consciousness. And when he woke up, there was total silence in the house. And went back. His wife had been stabbed like 28 times. The children had been stabbed and murdered. And it was just a horrible, horrible situation. He called the military police. They arrived at the scene. He was had passed out in the meantime. And the government claimed that he had staged this. And they said that the motive was because the child had wet the bed, the 5.5-year-old child had wet the bed, and he tried to go to bed, and it was wet, and he and his wife got in an argument. So he brutally murdered the whole family, which is absolutely unbelievable that they would accuse him of such an atrocious crime for a child wetting the bed. But that was what they claimed the motive was. So I began my investigation.
Who hired you to investigate the case?
It was a woman named Phyllis Hughes, who was the wife of a doctor in Huntington Beach, California. And Dr. McDonald, in the meantime, was out on bail, and he had come to California.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment now. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Ted was telling the story of the McDonald murder. Jeffrey McDonald, a Green Beret physician, was laying on the couch one evening at home, and suddenly there are 3 people or 4 people hovering over him, and there's a woman and a couple of men, and then, of course, he hears his wife screaming in the background, and of course, somebody stabs him, or I don't know whether they hit him or what they did, but he passed out, and when he woke up, he went in, his wife had been stabbed brutally numerous times. Both of his children were dead. And then, of course, when he called the police, they came up with this theory that he'd killed his wife because his child had wet the bed, and he was angry with the child, and it was totally contrived, as you'll hear later on. Of course, this was a satanic murder, as have been so many, whether it be the Manson murders, the David Berkovich murders. There are satanic cults here in America, and there's an organized effort on the part of the FBI and the military to play this part down. Why? They don't want the American people to know about it, and to know about the fact that the military is trying to work with the other dimension. They have actually units of the military that work very regularly trying to contact the power that comes from the supernatural dimension. I personally witnessed what a major general in the United States Army was able to do with a spoon, simply twirling it or making it into a couple of circles. I mean, I couldn't even budge the metal. He could do that because he had been working for years, part of our military, contacting the beings from the other dimension where the power is. Well, anyway, of course, they have to use Jeff McDonald as the scapegoat on this. They cannot let the American people know about the satanic coven, so pick up the story there.
Well, so what happened, Dr. Stan, is this woman, Helena Stokely, young woman, she was in her early 20s, had admitted to a number of people that she was the person who stood over Dr. McDonald and said, "Acid is groovy, kill the pigs, acid is groovy, kill the pigs." She kept telling people, but she would not know that she was in the house that night and she was one of the murderers. And she actually told the prosecution this, and it's come out in the last several years. She told the prosecutor, Jim Blackburn, this, and he told her, "If you come forward with that story, we are going to try you for murder." So, of course, here I am.
I think it's important people know that there was a U.S. Marshal there, and within the last year and a half, that Marshal, after all these years, 25, 26 years later, his conscience got the best of him, and he came forward and he said, "I was there when the woman confessed to the prosecutor, who said, 'If you tell that story, we'll go after you for murder.'" And so, of course, she didn't dare tell the story. Go right ahead.
So, but she did go to the defense, the defensive team, and she tried to talk to them. They shunned her, basically. Bernard Siegel was the lawyer for Dr. McDonald, and she was mad. She walked out on them. She went to both sides to try to tell her story, but she did make these admissions to various people. And so, of course, first thing I did is I had to target Helena Stokely. So I flew from California to North Carolina in January 1980. I flew to North Carolina, and I knew I had to locate Helena Stokely, and I knew that she was the key to solving this case. And I worked with a retired police officer from Fayetteville named Prince Beasley. Now, Prince had used Helena as a drug informant. He said that Helena was the best informant he had ever had. She put several hundred people in jail who were dealing drugs. And what actually happened is people would come from the outside of Fayetteville, out of North Carolina, into the base to try to deal drugs. And she was putting out the competition is what she was doing, because Helena was part of a drug operation. And long story short, I ended up finally convincing Helena that she needed to tell her story to me, and she ended up on October 25, 1980, some 10 months after I entered the case, giving me a signed confession as to what happened. She had tried to give this confession to the authorities and to the defense team, but they didn't seem to want it. Nobody wanted to know what the truth was. And what happened, Dr. Stan, is that Helena and her group, this satanic cult group, were part of a large-scale drug operation, and drugs were being flown in plastic bags in the body cavities of the dead GIs out of the Golden Triangle, out of Vietnam and Cambodia and Laos, into the various military bases in the United States. And the drugs that were being flown into Fort Bragg were being distributed by Helena's satanic cult group up and down the East Coast. And that was the reason for the cover-up. Helena told me there were generals involved in this. There were enlisted personnel. There were police officers. There were two attorneys in Fayetteville who were involved in this large-scale drug operation. Now, of course, the authorities who were running the operation, the prosecution and so forth, didn't dare to come forward with this because they were obviously involved in a cover-up. They knew this, and it just never came out. I was the one that I finally was able to bring this information out to the public. I let Helena think that I had an informant on the inside that was giving me this information. It was good investigative technique. And I finally got Helena to come out to California and sat down with her, and I spent 10 days with her in California for the first series I had with her. And she said that it was her initiation into the satanic cult group that night. And she, of course, had to be a part of the murders. That was basically how I became involved in the issues that I'm involved in today and have been for the last 26, 27, 28 years. I went public with this information. I was on national TV. I was on national radio, numerous radio shows. And I preached from the rooftops that this was a large-scale drug operation, and it was satanic, a satanic cult, that the cult was distributing these drugs up and down the East Coast, and that was the reason for the cover-up. And, but, of course, they even said that there were two generals involved, which is what Alina told me. And
don't you think that the CIA was involved in this, or at least some of the intelligence agencies?
Yes. Alina said that the Army was involved, but, of course, you and I know that the CIA has been involved in illegal drug operations for years. And although I have no direct knowledge the CIA was involved in this, I don't think there's any question about it that they were, in my opinion. And they were, by the way, this is documented, this drug type operation, this technique, plastic bags full of drugs in the body cavity of dead GIs, was in a Time magazine article, January 1, 1973. So it is documented.
Of course, there was a book called Kiss the Boys Goodbye by Monica Jensen Stevenson, who had actually worked initially for CBS and put on some excellent programs there about the men we abandoned, and then she wrote this book, Kiss the Boys Goodbye, and of course, it was her contention. The reason we abandoned those boys over there was because, of course, if they'd come home, many of them would have known about the CIA drug operations. We couldn't allow that. Her books were actually withdrawn from local stores. They were destroyed. She moved to Canada. Got the copyright back. The book was republished up there, Kiss the Boys Goodbye. And then somebody accidentally shredded 5,000 copies of her book. Can you imagine that? Just accidentally shredded 5,000 copies of the book. We have second-hand copies, incidentally, here, which they tell the same story about how they simply gutted American soldiers coming home from Vietnam and stuffed their body cavities with drugs. And, of course, everybody in intelligence knows the CIA is involved. It's just that it's like the wife's always the last one to know. It's the American people are the last ones to know about the CIA involvement. But the book, Kiss the Boys Goodbye, secondhand copies available from Radio Liberty. You need to read it. You need to weep about what's gone on and about the 1,000 or more boys that we abandoned over there in Vietnam. And, of course, one of the major culprits was John McCain, who was a United States senator, did everything he could to cover up the truth about the men we left behind. That's the story, title of the book. Go ahead, Ted.
Well, there's no question about it. There's a fellow named Red McDaniel.
Right.
Out of Washington, D.C., and he was shot down at POW. And his navigator, he was in a fighter pilot, and his navigator went down also and never came back. And Red swore that he would do everything he could to get his navigator back. And Red wrote all kinds. He was involved in furnishing information to people like Mike Blair with the American Free Press. Mike wrote a whole series of articles about the GIs that we left behind in Vietnam. And this is tragic. And I'm sure that by now most of them have passed on or are dead. This is horrible. It's horrible. And McCain, how could you possibly vote for somebody like McCain who did absolutely nothing to bring those boys back, even though he was in a position to do so? And Red McDaniel, I personally talked to Red on a number of occasions in the past, back in the 1980s, and he couldn't understand it. He went to the politicians, he went to the senators, he went to everybody he could to try to get the boys to come back, to have our government go over there and bring our boys back. And it just didn't work.
Of course, a lot of them were taken off to Moscow to be used for experimental purposes. Our government knew it. There's a book called Moscow Bound. In fact, we've got an excellent book we carry called Betrayed by Dr. Douglas, Joe Douglas. It goes into the background of all of this we're talking about, and not into the CIA and drugs, but into the men that were taken to Moscow to be experimented on. American soldiers abandoned by their government because they had a different agenda, because we have people working in Washington, D.C., who are basically and inherently evil. They're what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. And they've done everything to cover up these satanic cults, the satanic movement throughout the world. And could you imagine them experimenting on your son, or your father, or your brother? Well, go right ahead.
Well, Dr. Stan, this is one of many, many sad stories. And the satanic movement is actually an international movement, and it ties into an organization known as the Illuminati. And I have a book called Pawns in the Game that fully explains this whole situation, the international movement to take over the world. And now they're talking about the North American Alliance, the Asian Alliance, the European Alliance.
Well, that, of course, was the book written by Commander Guy Carr. And although I never met him, I think he was a very honest, sincere individual. But nobody's ever read his last book. Certainly Guy Carr believed it was a Jewish conspiracy until he suddenly began to realize this was not a Jewish conspiracy. It was a satanic conspiracy. And he actually wrote his last book was incomplete, but his son completed it. And I've forgotten the exact title, but it goes into the fact that there is a worldwide satanic conspiracy by Commander Guy Carr, the third book that he wrote. And I think that you have to be in this for a long time before you begin to put all of the parts together. This is a worldwide satanic conspiracy, and it involves people at the highest levels of every government in the world. I think once you understand that, it makes so much more sense. But certainly the Pawns in the Game was an excellent book, but it only told part of the story. So go right ahead.
Well, and of course, after I went public with the Jeffrey McDonald case, people just came from all walks of life, from all over the United States, to me and started furnishing me background information, details, and data concerning the cult movement itself. These were people who were trying to get out of the movement. And so as a result, of course, I accumulated hundreds and hundreds of details and information, extensive information about the movement itself. And it's taken me a combination of a series, starting in 1980 up to the present time, to fully understand that this is an international conspiracy. It is taking place today. And it's called, as I said, and William Guy Carr, in the book that I make available to the public, is called Pawns in the Game. And, of course, the worldwide conspiracy involves 25 goals back in 1776 when the Rothschild family in England ordered a former Jesuit priest, Adam Weishaupt, to come up with the goals to take over the world. And on pages 26 and 27 of Pawns in the Game, William Guy Carr sets forth the 25 goals. And these goals involve control of the press, which they most certainly do, we know that, and to corrupt the youth through sex and drugs, to elect our own people to office. If we can't elect our own people, to put our own agenteurs in as advisors. And it's really a mind-boggling operation, and they are, as you said, they have infiltrated every level of society. People send me lists of people who of individuals who are involved in the satanic movement, the leaders, and of course I filed these away. And like, for example, I had a letter not too long ago. A woman in Illinois sent me a list of the leading cult members in that area. Had another one.
Hold that thought, Ted. We'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris said Ted is well aware of this worldwide satanic movement, these cults, and he was just simply talking about their plan. They've written it out. Of course, they've tried to attribute it to the Jews. It's not a Jewish conspiracy. It's a satanic conspiracy, and there are Satanists within the Jewish who pretend to be Jews. And, of course, why, of course, this is how you can get anti-Semitism going. You can lead people away from what this is really about. And of course, Ted simply points out that these people have infiltrated every aspect of our society. They certainly want to control the media. They want to corrupt our youth with sex and drugs. They've written all of these things out. It's all there in a written plan in a book that he offers. And then he points out that people from all over the country contact him with information. And he was recently writing, mentioning some woman had contacted him with a list of the members of the a cult in her section of the country. So pick the story up there, Ted.
Well, I have this information, and of course, as a result of the work that I have performed in exposing this on the radio shows such as yours, Dr. Stan, and I give lectures all over the country. In fact, I gave a lecture to the Prophecy Club back in last July, 16 cities in 20 days. I am doing the best I can to get the word out. There are numerous lectures of mine that are available on DVD, and I make them available for free, as by the way I might mention. And although my website right now, tedgunderson.com, is down, I do have a second website called 1-FREE-DVD.com. And those, if you go to that website, 1-FREE-DVD.com, you'll see a list of over 400 DVDs that I'm giving away for shipping and handling. So I'm like you, Dr. Stan. I'm doing the best I can to get the word out.
And in fact, is that talk you gave at the Prophecy Club, did that go into the Jeffrey McDonald crime and so many of the other things?
Yes. I start out all my lectures with how I became involved in these issues. And it started with the McDonald case. I mean, before the McDonald case, I was totally ignorant about what was going on.
It comes as such a revelation when you suddenly realize what we're up against, and the fact that it seems that most people have no idea. Now, actually, you have the interview, video interview with a woman who was there when Jeffrey McDonald's wife and children were killed. Don't you offer that?
Yes, I offer that. I offer her confession. It's Helena Stokely's confession. It's among the DVDs that I give away free.
Now, of course, the thing is that the authorities know this, the prosecutor knows this, the judges know this, and Jeffrey McDonald, what, 25, 26 years later, is still in prison?
Still in prison, Dr. Stan.
And an innocent man, and they know he's innocent, but to let him out would mean that there really are satanic cults out there, and we couldn't let the American people understand that. They might begin to realize what this conspiracy is really all about. It's a satanic conspiracy to rule the world.
Well, now, the latest information on the McDonald case, Dr. Stan.
Okay, where do we stand?
Well, 1997, now this is 11 years ago, the judge ordered DNA tests. And he said that only the prosecution could be present when they opened the evidence envelopes. Well, defense was not present, was not allowed to be present. And of the 15 evidence envelopes, 5 of them ended up being empty, according to the prosecution. But they still have done those DNA tests. Now, the DNA test is very favorable to Dr. McDonald, as a matter of fact. One of the tests, pieces of evidence that the cult who's involved in covering this up did not destroy is a hair, including the root, from under the fingernail of one of the children. And that hair, that with that root, does not match anybody in the McDonald family. Now, that was 11 years ago, and that evidence, the DNA evidence, is on the judge's desk today as we talk, and he has not had a hearing for a new trial.
Has this been there for 11 years, or how long has the judge had the information?
Well, the judge ordered the DNA test at the insistence of Dr. McDonald's defense attorney in 1997, and the tests have been completed for several years now, and nothing's come of it. Nobody's had a hearing. We need to have a hearing to ask for a new trial.
Well, of course, the thing is, you have to understand, ladies and gentlemen, that there is a organized effort to cover up evidence of satanic cults, the satanic organizations, because they would lead, of course, if you were to follow them, right to the various highest levels of our government. Why do you think we're fighting a no-win war in Iraq? We're not trying to win over there. If you doubt that, you get my December 2007 newsletter written by, it's basically the speech given by the general who was commanding the troops in Iraq for a year, Ricardo Sanchez. Read what he has to say. We're not allowed to win over there. We will never win the war because our boys are not allowed to. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. You go right ahead, Ted.
Well, I mentioned a few moments ago the 25 goals to take over the world. And one of them is, I have documentation on one of them that's really solid, and that is to control the press. I have a copy of the Congressional Black Record. I think it's page 2949, but I'm not positive about the page number, for February the 9th, 1917, where Congressman Callaway from Texas stood on the congressional floor and announced that the J.P. Morgan interests had bought up 25 of America's leading newspapers and inserted their own editor in order to control the press. Now, what they did is they did a survey of 79 newspapers around the country, and they picked these 25 papers out as the ones that they would need to buy and control in order to control the information that's being fed to the American people. So that's, look at this. That's almost 100 years ago. You can imagine how they've controlled the press today.
Well, of course, we used to carry a book by Professor Ben Bagdikian, who is a professor at the University of California in Berkeley. In fact, we will be interviewing him very, very soon. But Professor Bagdikian actually had been studying this very issue, who controls the American media, since 1983. And his latest book, I believe it was 2003 or 2004 or 2005, he said five mega corporations control 90 to 95% of the major media outlets in America. But of course, you won't find that book in the local bookstores because the publisher refuses to sell the discount it sufficiently so that anybody can really afford to carry the book. They give you a 20% discount by the time you get through with paying the shipping and the other expenses. Why, of course, there's no profit at all. But we will eventually make that book available to our ministry, even if we have to put it out as a loss. People need to understand the media in America is controlled. And why don't you ever hear about this? Because they control the media, and then I can let the American people know the truth. Go right ahead.
Well, you know, and that's of interest because I have a professor in Philadelphia that wants to write my biography. And he has approached the publishing industry, and they say that they don't have anything to do with that. So I'm blackballed. People don't want to know, people in the industry don't want to know about a fellow named Ted Gunderson. And if you go on the Internet with me, Dr. Stan, you will find, I've been told this, I've never counted this, somebody told me there's 183,000 references.
Hold that thought, we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Ted is just talking about how the media is controlled, and I certainly agree. Quoted the book by Professor Bagdikian, and professor of UC, has studied this since 1980, and he claims that 90 to 95% of the major media outlets are actually controlled by one of five mega corporations. Ted was mentioning that there was a professor who wanted to write a biography of Ted, but he approached the major media, and none of the major media would, of course, even consider actually publishing a biography of Ted Gunderson because they don't want his information out. They don't want the American people to know about the satanic cult that dominates our society, and it's very, very important that you do understand it. In fact, right at this time, Ted, I'd like you to once again tell people how they can get at least to the one of your websites that's up and open and operating so they can get some of your material.
Well, my regular website is tedgunderson.com, and that is down. And I'm trying frantically to get it back up. I tried yesterday and today to get it up without any success. But the other website that I have is I'm giving away free DVDs, and it's the number 1-FREE-DVD.com, number 1-FREE-DVD.com. I have over 400 DVDs that I give away, including most of my lectures. And my latest lecture, Dr. Stan, I had a tremendous response from. I just gave three lectures in Southern California, and people really liked it. And the lecture is called Infiltration of American Intelligence Agencies and Law Enforcement by the Illuminati. And I go step by step of the cases that I have personally handled in this lecture. This lecture is available through these 1-free-dvd.com. What most people are doing is, if you order 10 of them, shipping and handling is $17.83. Most people are just sending me $20, which they don't make any money on this, as you can tell. So they're buying 10 at a time for roughly $20, and I urge you folks to go forward and check that out on the internet and get these some of these DVDs. It not only includes some of my DVDs, but other DVDs by and lectures by other individuals. But the latest, my latest lecture, I urge you folks to get it. And you know, if you have an opportunity, get my lectures. Make copies and get it to your friends. Because that's what this is about, exposing the Illuminati, exposing the satanic movement to the American people. This is not about Ted Gunderson making money or Dr. Stan making money. This is about trying to save our country. So my latest lecture is Infiltration of American Intelligence and Law Enforcement by the Illuminati.
How long is that talk?
That talk is roughly a little under 2 hours.
Okay, fine. Well, I think it's... Certainly, I've known Ted. There, I will tell you, there's an organized effort to discredit Ted. And, of course, they do this by a whispering campaign. He's really a government plant. He's infiltrating the conservative movement. I don't believe that for 1 minute. Yeah, I'm sure you've heard the same thing, Ted. It must really hurt you to see how far they're going to try to destroy your reputation. And yet, Ted, I believe, is totally dedicated to getting the truth out.
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, it's kind of interesting because as I started to tell you this a few moments ago, I've been told that there's 183,000 references to me on the internet, which is kind of shocking, and 99% of them are favorable. There's 1% that are very unfavorable, and of course that is information that's been put out there by, to be honest with you, and I can document this, FBI informants. One guy in particular is a fellow named Stu Webb. I can document he's an FBI informant. I have him on a video, a DVD actually, where he says that he's working for the FBI and he's actually been given a symbol number. And we gave, when I was in the FBI for 27 plus years, we gave symbol numbers to our informants only. By giving them a symbol number, when you attribute information to them in your report, nobody knows who that information came from.
Well, I've talked to Stu Webb, and let's put it this way, I will never have him on my program again. And, of course, I decided that long before he told me what you just told me. I mean, he's there actually to put out this information, but to scare people to death. Of course, he does a great job of it, comes out with these sensational stories, and you never would want to give any credence to them. At least I would not.
Well, he has put out a lot of disinformation about me. He put out information... And it's on the internet now, where I was kicked out of the FBI for practicing satanic ceremonies in the federal building. And okay. At my retirement party, Dr. Stan, I had former Governor Pat Brown, I had current governor at the time, Jerry Brown, I had Chief of Police Daryl Gates, I had Sherman Block, Sheriff of L.A. County, I had Tom Bradley, who was city councilor, who was mayor, by the way, I had movie stars, and I had Barry Goldwater sent some representatives. And so these are just absolutely not true stories. Also, that I've been involved, one of the latest ones I think that's really amusing is that I've been married 5 times. And I've only been married once, and lasted 24 years. We got divorced. And, you know, it's one of those things. You know what, 50% of the population is probably divorced today. But I'm married 5 times. Well, Stu Webb has a criminal record as long as your arm, assault, driving under the influence, drugs, and everything else. And I took him in. I've had people planted on me. I mean, I've had so many people planted on me, I feel like the Garden of Eden, to be honest with you.
Well, of course, anybody who's effective, they will try to get close to them, and then, of course, they can manipulate them. They've done this with most of the conservative leaders in America, and I've personally witnessed over and over again whether the infiltration of Pat Matriciana's organization or Michael Rupert's organization or Media Bypass, or I can think of, you know, probably offhand at least half a dozen of people I've been intimately associated with where they've infiltrated, the FBI's infiltrated their organizations to destroy it.
Oh, absolutely. In addition to Stu Webb, I probably had 18 or 20 people planted on me, and Stu Webb came to me. He came to me once, and I thought he was a patriot. And he said, I need a place to stay for 3 or 4 days. And so I let him stay at my place. I had a 3-bedroom condominium in Las Vegas. And he ended up staying 7 months. And when he left, Dr. Stan, he stole me blind. He waited till I was in Los Angeles on a lecture, and he walked out of my apartment with case after case of my research, with 35 copies of Bryce Taylor's book, Thanks for the Memories, which are selling now for around $75 each. And I had those on consignment from Bryce. And it's unbelievable. And so he's just one. There's another one named Barbara Hartwell, who's from the CIA family. She's been bad-mouthing me.
Well, of course, I don't want to get into too many of the names because, of course, we don't want to leave ourselves open for lawsuits. But certainly I know that there's certain people out there, a lot of people out there who I'm sure have infiltrated you, tried to befriend you, only to betray you. Can this really happen in America? Sure, certain people are targeted to their destruction. I just think God's must have been looking after you, Ted, to keep you going all this time.
That's the understatement of the year, Dr. Stan. You know, right after I exposed the McDonald case to the American people, in fact, I appeared on CNN, I appeared on Discovery Channel, 48 hours. In fact, the last show, I think, was Discovery Channel here about a year or so ago. But right after that, I learned that I was under investigation by the FBI. And I subsequently learned through the Freedom of Information Act that they actually had 3 investigations going on me. And I knew, I had advance information that the U.S. attorney in Dallas, a fellow named Bill Alexander, planned to indict me on a Tuesday. And I heard about this about a week prior to that. And so I took 3 polygraph tests. And, of course, I passed. And I gave them to my attorney, Doug Mulder, who's an outstanding former district attorney there in Dallas. And I told Doug, I said, give these to the foreman of the grand jury and to Bill Alexander. And he did, and it prevented me from being indicted by the grand jury on a Tuesday. He got them to the grand jury on a Monday, as a matter of fact. But here I am. Here I'm living on a retirement check. And can you imagine the expense I would have had? I'd had to hire an attorney and all the time and effort put forth on that. So they were not successful there with me. And the next thing that happened is I had 3 occasions when gunmen were waiting for me. And people say, well, how do you know gunmen were waiting for me? Well, I'll tell you one of the experiences I had. This one particular night, I had a place on 500 South Kelton in Los Angeles, California. I had an apartment there opened onto the street door. My landlady came home. I did not go home that night. I was stayed at a friend's house. And the landlady came home at 1:30 in the morning, and 2 men were sitting in the car across from my front door. One of them got out and came over to her and said to her, you know where Ted Gunderson lives. Of course, I told the landlady that if anybody asks about me, you don't know me. She went up to the second floor and watched these men in the car. They waited till 1:45 and drove off. Well, the next night after that, when I did come home, my landlady told me about this, and I made some phone calls, and I learned that I had a contract out on me. As a matter of fact, after I did some research and made some more phone calls, I learned I had 2 contracts out on me. One was by the Israeli Mafia, and the other one was by the Satanic Cult out of Florida and Houston, Texas. There are high concentrations of Satanists in the Houston, Texas area, by the way.
Were they tied into the this organization? What was it? There was a worldwide satanic cult at that time, and I've forgotten the name of it. It was something like the Prospects or something.
OTO, Oro Templo Oriente.
Uh huh.
Yes. As far as I know, they were. I was able to get the hits taken off of me.
How did you get them to withdraw the contract?
Beg your pardon?
How did you get them to withdraw the contract?
Well, in my business, investigative business. You have to know a lot of people in a lot of walks of life. And I had some contacts who were ex-cons. And as a matter of fact, there were three of them. Three people I knew. Two of them were ex-cons. And I went to them and I said, what do I do? And one of them said, well, I'll tell you what. He says, I used to work for a fellow out of Los Angeles who was known as the cocaine king of the West Coast. And let's go talk to him. And so we made an appointment to go talk to him. And went in his apartment. It was actually his home. And we sat down in the parlor. We were met at the front door by an individual who I ended up learning was involved in contract killings himself. And that's another story. And we went in and sat down in the parlor, and a little dog came in. There were four of us there now, three of them and me, and smelled everybody and laid down at my feet and went to sleep. And the cocaine king of the West Coast came in the room, looked at the dog, looked at me, and said, my dog likes you. I like you. So he told the other three to leave the room. Now, at that particular time, there was a fellow named Robert Ferrante, who had come out of his office some several weeks prior to this, and about midnight, and a gunman stepped out of the bushes with a mask on and shot at him a number of times, hit him five times, and he lived. I was asked to investigate the murder and find out who put the hit on Robert Ferrante. And so I learned that his accountant had come out of the parking lot around 6 o'clock that same night, and there was a car with a man sitting in it with the trunk of the car to the building, and the man was just sitting there. And the night of the shooting, 6 hours later of the shooting, a car of that same description pulled out with the motor idling. Another car on the other side of the parking lot pulled out. And the gunman went and jumped in the other car. And then, of course, this other car that I'm talking about that the accountant noticed took off. Now, what I did, Dr. Stan, is I put the accountant under hypnosis and brought in an artist, and we did an artist reception of the man in that car. And I learned through my contacts, after I get the picture, he was known as Nick the Greek. And Nick the Greek was the fellow who opened the door of the house at the Cocaine King of the West Coast. He was there that night. And so I was kind of surprised, but I was with three other people, so I figured I'm okay. So long story short, Nick the Cocaine King of the West Coast had pulled out this artist exception and handed it to me. And well, his first question was, how many children do you have? Well, he was threatening me with my children if I didn't answer the right question. And then he pulled out this artist conception of this Nick the Greek fellow, who I later identified as Nick the Greek, by the way. And he said, who did this? And I told him, I said, look, I'm not going to tell you who did this if you're going to do any harm to him. I'll take the heat. And he was kind of set back because I guess people aren't used to, like that, aren't used to having people stand up to them. And he showed me then he would not do anything to the person that gave me the artist conception. So somehow or other, this fellow, Cocaine King of the West Coast, got a hold of this artist conception. And he liked me, apparently because of the dog, I guess. And he said, let me be right. You have it on you. I said, well, I've been told I have it on me. So he left the room and came back. He says, you're right, you do have a hit on you. I took one of the hits off, but I couldn't take the other one off. And he was able to take the hit by the Israeli mafia off. And I learned later that the hit by the satanic cult, he couldn't do anything about that. So I went underground, Dr. Stan. I went to, I had a business, a flourishing business in Los Angeles. I had a staff of about eight people. And I just couldn't keep the business going if I wasn't there personally. And I went to Dallas and lived in a condominium with a friend of mine secretly. And then Effley Bailey hired me, and I traveled with him for quite a while. And it took me about 18 months, and I was able to finally take the hit off that was put on me by the satanic cult group. And we were very fortunate, because in the meantime, I've become so well known that if anything happens to me now, it would establish credibility. It would would become as productive to them, and it would give me credibility if anything happens to us. So I'm pretty well known now.
Somebody had just called in. There was something known as the Process Church of the Latter-day Judgment. That was certainly a worldwide a satanic cult here in the United States, tied into, of course, to David Berkovitz, the Son of Sam, tied into it, the Charles Manson. Do you know anything about the Process Church of the Latter-day Judgment?
Oh, yes, and very definitely. As a matter of fact, there's a book out by Maury Carey that was out back in late 1980s, and called The Ultimate Evil.
Right. In fact, I interviewed Maury Carey. Fascinating interview. Hey, well, our guest this evening has been Ted Gunderson. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not imaginary. It's real. The trouble is that these people are sending our boys over to fight and bleed and suffer and die in Afghanistan and Iraq, but they never tend to let them win. Well, Ted, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up this segment of the program, and we've got a good deal more to do, so go right ahead. What message would you like to leave, at least with our listeners? A few of them are going to be leaving us at the end of this hour, so go right ahead.
Well, the message I want to leave is get my free DVDs, make copies, and get them out to your friends. I've done everything I can to expose these people. It's up to you to pick up the torch and carry it further than I can possibly carry it. So just say one-free-dvd.com. It's right there. It's there. It's available to you for free, free, free. Okay.
That's pretty hard to beat that. And certainly, I can assure you that Ted's material is excellent. We need to get it out far and wide because Ted is involved in the same battle we are, and that is trying to expose the spiritual forces behind what's going on today. Okay. Well, of course, they can get those DVDs. Are they free to actually copy them and to get?
Oh, I want everybody to copy them.
How many are you getting out? I mean,
well, I've got about 400 that I give out.
But I mean, how many people have actually come forward and been willing to get your material and help us get it out across America?
Well, quite a few people have ordered them, I have no way of knowing how many, but probably hundreds, several hundred. I have a conference this weekend in Southern California, Paimon, its conference. He's the Freedom Law School, if you want to look that up on the Internet, Freedom Law School Conference. I'll be giving a lecture there. And I give them away at the conference. I don't give them away. I have an order blank, and they can order them and from there. But, I want people to get copies and my copies and make copies and get it out.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, here's a wonderful opportunity for you to get this material and help us to get it out. It is so difficult for people to realize that there really are satanic cults right here in the United States that are being covered up and concealed by people at the highest levels of government. That doesn't mean the average government official has any idea what this is all about. But there is a small group that do, and they're usually in key positions, and some of them are even working for the CIA. Some of them are working for the FBI. In fact, there's an FBI agent. His job is, anytime anybody's talking about satanic cults, to go out and say, there are no satanic cults. There's nothing to worry about. It's all hysteria. Have you run into that fellow?
Oh, yes. Ken Lanning was notorious for that back in the 80s and the 90s. Ken Lanning was with the Behavioral Science Unit.
Hold up. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Sidney. Our guest this evening has been Ted Gunderson, and I hope you'll take him up on his offer to get his free DVDs and get the information out. Now, Ted had mentioned a book called The Ultimate Evil by Maury Torrey. The book is out of print, although you may be able to get it on Amazon. I've interviewed Maury Torrey, fascinating interview, but much of his material now is in a book we are carrying called Satanic Crimes. Goes into the Bilderbergers and this a group of powerful, fabulously powerful and wealthy international leaders and the people there from the royalty of Europe. But you have to understand that within the so-called black nobility of Europe, these same satanic cults exist. So the book, The Satanic Crimes, and then, of course, we have a four-tape set that goes right along with that called Satanic Crimes. And you can get it either in tapes or in CDs. You need to get the information. You need to begin to put it together. We actually have a DVD on the Bilderbergers put out by our good friend Alex Jones called The Endgame. It goes into their plan to kill off most of the world's population. In fact, Alex got a lot of his material off of our website, off of our writings, and he acknowledges that. And I'm flattered that he would think that my material was worthwhile reproducing, but you'll see a lot of it there in his DVD, The Endgame on Population Control and the Plan for Mass Extermination. And people say that's crazy talk. Well, of course, you need to get DVD, you need to get my 4-tape set on the Bilderbergers, and then the 3 books we have on the Bilderbergers by Daniel Estulin, the Bilderberger Diary by James Tucker, and then Satanic Crimes by William H. Kennedy. And they're all there. They will all tell you about the Bilderbergers. These are not imaginary organizations. There are really people out there. We're deeply involved in Satanism. We have a book called Diary of a Devil Hunter. A man who was involved in Satanism used to go around the country lecturing to police forces in various parts of the country. And then this gentleman would come from the FBI to undermine what the author had said. Why? Because they cannot let you know that it is really true, that there is another dimension there, and these Satanists are in touch with the other dimension. If you've not yet gotten our DVDs, pardon me, I should say our 4-tape or 4-CD set on the supernatural, you need to get it, and of course listen to the interviews with Johanna Michelson, who is a medium, and then read her book, The Beautiful Side of Evil. The Beautiful Side of Evil. You need, of course, to get the book, Hostage to the Devil, and of course the 4-tape set that goes with that, The Wisdom of Malachi Martin, because Father Malachi wrote the book, Hostage to the Devil, goes into 5 exorcisms. And I will promise you, after you've read that book, you'll never look at the world through the same eyes again. We're involved in a spiritual battle and a supernatural battle against the forces of darkness in this world. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, shame on you. You need to get it. You need to read it. You need to study it. You can watch it on my website called Brotherhood of Darkness. There's a DVD up there. Of course, if you'd like to get the DVDs or get large numbers of them, we can recommend that to you. And then, of course, we hope that you'll get my talk on the forbidden secret, because there is a secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years. Through the secret societies and the sages of the secret societies and the adepts of the secret societies. And it was a secret that is never to be known until this time in history. And then, of course, we have a wonderfully, very professionally, a set of DVDs. One is called The Secret Mystery of America's Beginnings. And the second one, I recommend even more strongly, if you're only going to get one, get the second one, which is Riddles in Stone, The Secret History of the architecture of our nation's capital. Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, our number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, and we'll be right back. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for this next hour, they're going to be the views, again, of Ted Gunderson. Okay, Ted, are you still there?
Oh, I'm here. Still here, Dr. Stan.
Well, you go ahead and pick the story up.
Well, I might go back to Maury Terry's book, The Ultimate Evil. I did a lot of the research on the West Coast for Maury. And, for example, Berkowitz, this is the Son of Sam now, had told Maury in an interview that there was a satanic sign that was left at the scene of the Roy Radin murder. By the way, a fellow named Bill Mincer and three other cohorts were tried and convicted for Roy Radin's murder.
Now, could you tell our listeners just a little bit about that? Was he somebody who was some sort of affiliated with Hollywood and was killed there on the West Coast?
Yeah, Roy Radin was in a contract dispute with a leading Hollywood producer, and the story goes, and I don't want to name that producer because he was considered but not involved in the murders, and for some reason or other there was a contract put out on Roy Radin, and it was on a Friday the 13th of that, forget exactly what year it was. Roy Radin came out here for a meeting from New York. He was from Long Island, New York, and he met with Bill Mincer and three other individuals, and they took him for a ride about 65 miles north of Los Angeles and up into the hills, and he made a run for it, and they shot him with a shotgun, and then they put a stick of dynamite in his mouth and set it off. It was way out in the country, and he was found like 30 days later, his body was, and they traced him back to Long Island, New York, and Bill Mincer was he's in jail now, by the way. He was a well-known satanic contract killer. He was known as Charles Manson II. This is in Maury's book, The Ultimate Evil. And Mincer, as a matter of fact, in the spring of 1986, came into my living room, waited for me, and that was another occasion when I didn't go home. But that's another story. I guess I should not go home every night, and just every once in a while go home. So, but anyway, Mincer was ended up being tried and convicted for the Roy Radin murder, and sentenced to life in prison without parole, as I understand it. But it was kind of interesting because Berkowitz told Maury Terry that they left a sign, and in your cult murder, they always leave a sign. They're very arrogant, and so we looked at the crime scene. We were out there, I guess, about a year afterwards, and we looked at the crime scene, and we found under a scrub bush, under a scrub pine, the Bible, a Bible that was opened to Isaiah chapter 22:13, I think it was. And that the subliminal message there was drink of the blood, eat of the meat, and so on and so forth. That's in Isaiah. So this was one of the signatures that they left for the Roy Radin murder. They always leave a signature. And unless a professional investigator, professional means from the standpoint of realizing what the cult does and their telltale signs, is looking for it, you don't usually see it. You don't understand that it's there. But this is all written up in Maury Terry's book, The Ultimate Evil.
I remember that part of this story, and I always wondered who it was that actually found the Bible there.
Well, Maury and I both found the Bible there.
Okay.
We were at the scene, went up to the scene, looked it over, because Berkowitz had told Maury...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Go right ahead.
Let me keep going?
Go right ahead.
Oh, so anyway, Maury made, a number of trips to the West Coast, and I helped him with the investigation. Also, one of my associates, Judy Hansen, also worked with Maury Terry. And it was a fantastic book. It's, I think it sold very well. And I bought, I don't know how many copies of it, maybe 50 copies of it, and went to Washington, and I had appointments with congressmen and senators, and I went in and talked to them about it. In fact, Biden was one of the individuals I talked to. He met with me personally. I spent about 45 minutes with him. I left him a copy of the book, and of course, nothing ever came of it. I was kind of curious to find out that Biden wanted to interview me personally rather than have one of his administrative aides. Most of the congressmen, senators had one of their aides interview me and talk to me. But I passed this book out. I've made about, I guess in my career after the FBI, I made probably 6 or 8 different trips to Washington, D.C., trying to wake up our congressmen, senators. But they're, I don't know if they're sleeping or if they're part of the cover-up, but anyway, nothing seemed to work, including I have advanced information about the terrorist 911 terrorist attack. That's another story, and I went back to Washington and gave it to Congress, over 150 congressmen and senators. Nothing ever came of that. But anyway, going back to the ultimate evil. So anyway, I worked closely with Maury. Maury and I are very good friends. And I don't think Maury did any follow-up work. I don't know what he's doing now. He helped produce a couple of shows. And in fact, I was on a TV show with him in San Francisco where we discussed the ultimate evil. But that's just one of the things. Another thing we mentioned earlier about Ken Lanning. Ken Lanning is an apologist for the cults, or actually he's involved in it, and I'm not sure which. But he's gone around the country claiming, of course, police departments look up to the FBI as the experts. And in my career, I've learned that a number of police departments don't know what's going on. Most of them don't know what's going on when it comes to satanic cults. And so they go to the FBI for advice and seeking the research and what have you. And what's the FBI do? They refer these police departments to a fellow named Ken Lanning. Now, he's no longer with the FBI. He retired, by the way. And so Ken Lanning comes out and he says to the police departments, this is his basic
hold
line.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here to bring our stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Ted Gunderson is simply talking about how this Ken Lanning, who worked for the FBI for many years, now retired, but how Ken Lanning, certainly whenever there was a concern about satanic crimes in a local area, why, of course, it would go to the FBI, and Ken Lanning would come forward and say, there are no satanic crimes, there are no satanic cults in America. And it's sort of like J. Edgar Hoover for so many years said there is no mafia. They knew there was a mafia, but they didn't want the American people to know. Why? Because the mafia, of course, would be used to carry out assassinations for the CIA and for other branches of our intelligence service and people in high levels of government. They concealed the existence of the mafia really up until the time of the late 1950s, or perhaps even the early 1960s when President Kennedy came into office. And then, but now, of course, through the years, they've always insisted there were no satanic crimes. And it was very obvious there were, but the FBI then was actively covering for them. Did that represent the J. Edgar Hoover's relationship to the mob, to the Masons? He was a 33rd degree Mason. He himself was a transvestite, cross-dresser, and probably a homosexual. So was this the reason they were covering it up? I don't know. But go ahead, Ted.
Well, so Ken Lanning, basically his line is that there's no organized satanic cult, just a few dabblers around, writing on the walls and so on and so forth. And that was his approach. And, of course, it had tremendous influence over local police departments who are looking for information and searching for the truth. So he's been a real terrible terrible experience for him to do this. By the way, speaking of organized crime, Dr. Stan, when I was in the FBI, I worked under Bobby Kennedy, in the organized crime section for 2.5 years, and that came to light after the Appalachia meeting of the Mafia in Appalachia, New York, in the late 1950s, as you recall.
Right.
A state trooper noticed all these out-of-state license plates, cars that were visiting there, and started taking down the numbers, and it was a big Mafia meeting.
Right.
And that really broke open and exposed the Mafia, the first real good exposure of the Mafia.
And of course, the thing is, that may very well have been part of one reason why they wanted to get rid of Bobby Kennedy, because Bobby Kennedy then was pushing against the Mafia, and there were a lot of people within government, of course, were trying to conceal that evidence. And J. Edgar Hoover kept insisting there was no Mafia, no Casa Nostra. And, of course, after this meeting, and Bobby Kennedy did everything he could to bring out that there really was a Mafia, and Hoover then was forced to go after them.
Well, I have a little inside story on that. What happened was, within the FBI, there was William C. Sullivan. Bill Sullivan was a personal friend of mine. He was the assistant director and an outstanding individual. He was later murdered, by the way, in a hunting accident. It wasn't an accident. He was murdered in New Hampshire, supposedly hunting. He was shot by the son of a state trooper. He was domestic intelligence, which was internal security and what have you. And Bill said that there was a Mafia all along, and then the fellow who was in charge of organized crime, I don't need to mention his name, but I worked directly for him, said there was no Mafia. So J. Edgar Hoover believed the fellow who was in charge of organized crime that there was no Mafia against William C. Sullivan. By the way, I might mention that Bill Sullivan... I was an agent in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We call them brick agents, meaning we pounded the bricks, you know, the street agent. And I was in the field for about 10 years before I advanced to Washington, D.C. as a supervisor in organized crime. And Bill came out to talk to Los Alamos scientists for a lecture, and I drove him to Los Alamos. And on the way back, he took a liking to him. He said, "Ted, you need to advance." And Bill brought me back to Washington, D.C., and Bill ended up being liaison with the Warren Commission on the Jack Kennedy assassination. And he got in a feud with J. Edgar Hoover, and he came in one Monday morning, and his name had been scratched off the door, and the locks had been changed. Now, I never talked to Bill about this, but I suspect that he was a very honest man, very dedicated, and I really believe, in deep down inside, that he was trying to expose the true facts of the Jack Kennedy assassination, and he and J. Edgar Hoover got into it over that.
Well, I think Hoover was intensely trying to cover up the truth. I think they and the CIA and certainly people within the military and the Mafia, they were all involved in it. And that was the last thing they could do, was let the truth come out about the murder, the assassination of an American president.
Dr. Stan, I have personal, first-hand knowledge. I've interviewed an individual who can say and did tell me that the night before the Kennedy assassination, Clint Murchison Sr., big oil man in Dallas, had a private meeting, and in attendance at that meeting were Lyndon Baines Johnson and J. Edgar Hoover.
And I think Richard Nixon was there,
Richard
too.
Richard Nixon was there also.
Actually, we have, of course, interviewed Madeleine Duncan Brown, who was Lyndon Johnson's mistress, and she told me the same story. That's an art of the JFK assassination update set that we offer to our listeners. So there's no question that meeting. You've actually talked to somebody else at the meeting?
Yes, yes.
And will they come forward and talk about it, or they?
Well, no, they won't talk about it.
Okay, but at least they were willing to tell you, as long as you promised not to put the information out.
That's right. And yeah, so, but I put it out, but I don't want to identify that person.
And I think, ladies and gentlemen, you must understand that they killed Jack Kennedy, they killed Bobby Kennedy, they killed Martin Luther King, no question at all. But of course, they can't let the American people know about these things, and so of course. Sometimes people who know too much meet an unusual death, and I'm just glad that Ted Gunderson's still with us. Go right ahead.
Well, I plan to be with you for a number of years to come, believe me, Dr. Stan. It's only through divine intervention that I was able to avoid the three occasions when hitmen were waiting for me. But going back to Bill Sullivan, he was sitting on his porch in New Hampshire. He was there for hunting, and he was shot and killed by the son of a highway patrolman. And the highway patrolman's son said that he thought he was a deer.
Right.
I really think that Bill was murdered. I don't think there's any question about it. He knew too much. But continuing on, I might mention first of all, I said, you know, about the FBI investigation of me, three separate occasions. And then, of course, we had the hitmen looking for me on three separate occasions. And then that didn't work. So the FBI and the DEA concocted an idea to set me up on a drug deal. And they put a girl named Pam Fawcett on me for 6 months. And after 6 months, Pam called me from Modesto and wanted to meet with me in Los Angeles. I met Pam at the big supermarket parking lot in the San Fernando Valley. Pam told me the whole story, and I told Pam, I said, Pam, look, you're working for the FBI. She had the run of the Modesto FBI office. They'd given her $2,000. She had her own coffee cup. She could come and go when she pleased. And she had a 14-year-old son that she was having difficulty with, and she would call me on the phone, and I'd give her a little fatherly advice for about her son. And so when she came to me in this parking lot in the San Fernando Valley, she told me the story. And I said, Pam, why are you telling me this story? Why did you come to me after 6 months with those people? And she said, well, I woke up the other morning, I realized you're the only honest SOB that I've talked to in the last 6 months. So, of course, SOB was spelled out. But I gave her a polygraph test, and she passed. And I took a signed statement from her. I did a tape recorded interview of her, and I sent that signed statement back to Washington, D.C., to Mr. Buck Revell, who was number two man at that time in the FBI. And Buck Revell had worked for me when I was number two man in Philadelphia. He was head of the bank robbery squad. I was assistant special agent in charge back in the 70s. And I told Buck, I said, Buck, first, the FBI investigation, three investigations of me for alleged fraud. And now this, meaning Pam Fawcett's signed statement. And I told Buck, I said, you guys are Bush. So, you know, Bush League, of course, is minor league baseball. So, and then after that, Dr. Stan, after Pam Fawcett, then I had disinformation that started coming out about me by people like Stu Webb and so on and so forth, and other individuals. Like to say, we don't need to mention the other names, but they're out there. Now, the latest thing that happened to me, and this is kind of unusual, because here I'm on your radio show, and I can tell your people to do this. Go to MySpace, Ted Gunderson. MySpace, Ted Gunderson. Somebody has put up on MySpace, Ted Gunderson, a story that I supposedly wrote about my family. And at the end, what they're doing in this story, it's probably about 2 pages long. It's 2 pages full long on the internet, by the way, when you pull it off the internet. At the end, they're saying, this is me speaking, of course. They're saying it to me, but it isn't me. Somebody else wrote it. Hey, if you want to get out of the cult, come see me. I'll help you out. Well, this is a ploy by the cult. Use my name and use this letter as bait for people who want to get out of the cult. That way they can keep track of them. That is right out there, right now, if you want to go to MySpace, Ted Gunderson.
Okay, well, of course, the thing is that this is a nationwide network. There are literally millions of people involved in it. People say this could not be true. And yet, if you read Marilyn Ferguson's book entitled The Aquarian Conspiracy, she was sort of a low level, but she actually said too much. She put out too much information in that 1980 book, The Aquarian Conspiracy. You'll find the quotation, the most important quotation from the book, in my syllabus on the planned police state. That's the planned police state. But behind everything going on today are powerful spiritual forces intent upon the destruction of our nation and of freedom throughout the world. Well, Ted, go right ahead.
Well, so then we had, after Pam Fawcett, I exposed that to the FBI and DEA, and she gave me the names of the agents and detail after detail. And I take a real good signed statement, by the way, because I learned from a real pro when I first went into the FBI. And then there's a disinformation program by people like Stu Webb. As I say, he's an informant. I can document that, so you don't have to worry about a lawsuit, Dr. Stan. And then the next thing that happened is I've had an unbelievable number of surveillances of me. I've had people intimidate me. I've had my window shot out twice, and I'm standing near the window. I've been gassed. There've been attempts to gas me on the highway. I was able, because of my training and because of my experiences, I anticipated it and was able to avoid it. But the latest thing that happened to me, a year ago last May, I had a 3-bedroom condominium in Las Vegas, and I noticed I'd be sitting at my desk and I had difficulty thinking, and I was disoriented. And I went down and took blood tests, and I had arsenic and cyanide in me. And I had a funny smell into my apartment on a regular basis. And I realized that I was being poisoned. So within a 2 weeks' notice, I left Las Vegas. I checked out immediately, realizing that if I stayed there, I probably wouldn't be alive in 6 months from that date. And I moved to a small town in Nebraska, Claytonia, Nebraska. And my good friend, John DeCamp, who wrote the book, The Franklin Cover-Up, and I urge you folks to buy that book, by the way, The Franklin Cover-Up, tells it like it is. John wrote this book. He's a former state senator from Nebraska. I've been working with John for years, on and off, on the Franklin Cover-Up case out of Nebraska. That's another story. And John said, come on back, and I went back to Nebraska. And I rented a 4-bedroom, 2-bath house from John, an old timer, about 100 years old, beautiful old thing on about a third of an acre of land, and for $550 a month. And so, all you folks paying $1,500 for a 1-bedroom apartment in Los Angeles, you're welcome to come out and get yourself a good deal in Claytonia, Nebraska. But I was able, of course, by going to this location, Claytonia, Hey, they come around the corner, I see them. It's not like in the big city where you don't know if it's a surveillance or not.
Well, of course, the reason John DeCamp actually moved there was because his children had been threatened because of that book he wrote. And it involves, of course, some of the most wealthy and powerful people in the United States involved in a pedophile ring. It involves Boys Town. It's an amazing, amazing story. And of course, the depravity at the highest levels of government. Of course, that's the story of the Franklin cover-up, and everything has been done to conceal this book. It's available, though, and John DeCamp has never, I think, advertised it, but it certainly is, what, has got 100,000 copies out there?
180,000 copies he sold.
All right, of course, it's a wonderful book, and we really should be carrying it, because it goes along with this same story. All across America, there are pedophile rings, but there's this one major one, Franklin cover-up, went right into Washington, D.C., didn't it?
It went right to the top, right to the White House.
Right.
And that was before I moved to Claytonia a year ago last May. Of course, I've known John for years, back in the late 1980s.
Hold that thought. We'll be right there in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest is Ted Gunderson, and certainly we're talking about John DeCamp. John DeCamp was a member of the state legislature, who eventually wrote a book called The Franklin Cover-Up. It was the story of a massive pedophile ring. Of course, it began in the Middle West. It involved Boys Town. But it also went right up to Washington, D.C., right into the White House. They can't let the American people know about that. They can't let them know about Jeff Gannon, who's a male prostitute, who's made frequent visits to the White House. In fact, even stayed overnight a couple of times there, according to the Secret Service records. We can't let the American people know about that sort of thing, and yet of course it exists in our society today, and of course there are pictures of very high officials hugging this homosexual prostitute, somebody of course who at the highest level of the White House even today. But this has been going on for a long, long time. That's the Franklin cover-up, and you actually carry that book, don't you?
Yes, I do. That's on my website, tedjohnson.com. My website is down now. But this Pawns in the Game that I mentioned earlier and the Franklin cover-up are available if you want to send $18 to me. Can I give my address out?
Sure, go right ahead.
Send $18, that covers shipping and handling, to Ted Gunderson at P.O. Box 38, Post Office Box 38, Claytonia, C-L-A-T-O-N-I-A, Nebraska, 68328. For $18, you can get a copy of the Franklin cover-up and the book Pawns in the Game, $18 each, to Ted Gunderson, and that's Post Office Box 3838, Claytonia, C-L-A-T-O-N-I-A, Nebraska, 68328. And that book is that John wrote is a fantastic book. It tells it like it is.
It also mentions one of the wealthiest men in the world, as I remember.
Yeah, we don't. I was told by the kids. I interviewed a number of the kids involved in that case. I'm kind of unique, Doc. I'm not patting myself on the back, Doctor, but I'm not only a researcher, but I've gone out on the street and I've gone down in the trenches and I've done the work itself. I've been out there. Many of your authors, you just research and then write the books, but I've personally been involved in these cases at the street level. But I was told by the kids that I interviewed on the Nebraska Franklin cover-up case, you don't mention this person's name, it's not healthy. And so I kind of avoid mentioning his name, but he is mentioned in the book.
And I would once again suggest you read the book. I'm not about to go on the air and give the name out. That'll give you an incentive to get the book. But I would just simply say that if you were to talk about the wealthiest people in the world, why, of course, he would be one of the one of several that you would be naming. Go ahead.
That's right. That's right. And that case, Dr. Stan, that involves this. Again, hey, wait a minute. Wake up, America. Satanic cults again. What happened was there was $40 million missing from this Franklin Savings and Loan. And the Franklin Savings and Loan was a savings and loan in the minority neighborhood. A fellow named Harold Anderson. This is all in the book, so you don't have to worry about being sued, Dr. Stan. A fellow named Harold Anderson, past publisher of the Omaha World Herald, was on the board of directors. There was a black man named Larry King. He was the president. And long story short, they were able to recover $38 million. $2 million is still missing. They don't know what happened to it. As a result of the publicity and pictures in the paper, 80 children came forward and said, Mommy, that man molested me. And that's how the Franklin case got started. And it went from there. And it was involved satanic cults. It involved a human sacrifice. It involved some of the leading people in Omaha, Nebraska, in addition to Harold Anderson, past publisher of the Omaha World Herald. These are all named in the book, and the book's been out like for 18 years, so you don't have to worry about a lawsuit again, Dr. Stan. Bob Wadman, the chief of police of Omaha, and the head of the society page for the Omaha World Herald, the leading newspaper in the state of Nebraska, and so on and so forth. And what happened was these children were being taken out of foster homes, orphanages, and Boys Town and driven from Omaha to Sioux City, Iowa, 184 miles away, being placed in private jets, flown to Washington, D.C. for sex orgies with Congress and senators.
Incredible. Well, of course, the same sort of things happens at the Bohemian Grove, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know whether they take them from the Middle West, but you have to understand, we've got some of the biggest men in the world. The most powerful men in the world go to the Bohemian Grove and run around the woods naked. If you haven't seen the DVD we have, The Secrets of the Bohemian Grove, where, of course, Alex Jones interviews one of the ex-members of the Bohemian Grove, left, and he admitted he left because he didn't want to be with all those men running around in the woods naked up there in Santa Rosa, Northern California, not too far from where I live. And we have got a four-seat set on the Bohemian Grove as well. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest here is certainly Ted Gunderson. Ted, go right ahead with the story of the Franklin cover-up.
Well, that was just the tip of the iceberg. They were using these kids to blackmail congressmen, senators, and dignitaries. In my research, I have copies of the Washington Times headlines, front page, which documents this. And, of course, then what they do is they tell the congressmen and senators how to vote. Hey, you vote this way or we will expose you. Remember that party you were at last Friday where you had sex with that little boy? Well, so on and so forth. Now, the way they would, what they would do, there was a fellow named Rusty Nelson, who was the official photographer of the group. And Rusty was a farm boy from Nebraska, and he lived in Omaha. And he's a professional photographer, and he was taking pictures in the gay bar there, and they recruited him. We want you to come to work for us. So Rusty would go get on the big jets and the private jets and the lights and the action, and I'd never seen that before, go to Washington, D.C., and he would take pictures of these congressmen, senators, dignitaries having sex with the children, and that's how they blackmailed them. Now, what Rusty did is he would slip his own film in every once in a while and take pictures also, and then he would, of course, they would come for the pictures that he took officially, and he wouldn't tell them about the unofficial pictures he took for himself. And Rusty had these pictures, and they were with some people, the household name people, by the way, right up to the White House. And there was an investigator before me named Gary Caradori. Gary was a former Nebraska Highway Patrolman, and he was working for the committee, the Nebraska Senate Committee. John DeCamp was on the committee, along with Senator Lawrence Schmidt. And they were investigating this, and of course their careers had been ruined. They got rid of them in a hurry because they knew too much through the crooked voting machines, electronic voting machines. That's another story, by the way. And so Gary Caradori was rocking along, and Rusty Nelson is in Phoenix, and Rusty contacts Gary and says, I have the pictures that you're looking for. I have the smoking gun. So Gary Caradori jumps in his private plane, flies to Chicago. Rusty didn't want to meet him in Phoenix, because that's where he was living. And Rusty flew to Chicago also and met and gave Gary Caradori these pictures. Pictures of some of our leading people in Washington having sex with children. So he takes
Hold that story. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Ted is simply talking about, of course, they hired a photographer named Rusty. His job was to take pictures of the congressmen and senators in compromising relationships with these boys who had been taken from the Middle West, kidnapped from, or taken from foster homes from Boys Town, and brought for entertainment to Washington, D.C., and Rusty had the pictures. But there was somebody, who was this gentleman who wanted the inside information? Who is this?
Well, that would be Lawrence Schmidt and John DeCamp.
All right, but I thought you said that who was the other man that Rusty flew to Chicago to see?
Well, Gary Caradori was the investigator.
Oh, he was the investigator for the committee.
For the committee, right.
Investigating the case. So there was a Senate investigation there from the legislature in Nebraska, and they were investigating what was going on. Gary Caradori was the investigator, and so Rusty flies to Chicago to meet him and give him the pictures of all the things going on in Washington, D.C. So pick the story up there, Ted.
Gary has these pictures that Rusty gave him in Chicago, and Gary and his 11-year-old son fly out of Chicago at 1:30 a.m. in the morning, right, he's a short distance out of Chicago, near Aurora, Illinois, as a matter of fact, and a farmer happened to be in this field, looked up, and there was an explosion, and the plane crashed. There was debris scattered around, and the first person at the scene was a deputy sheriff. And he starts picking up these pictures. Along comes an FBI agent, and he grabs the pictures from the deputy sheriff, and he says, keep your mouth shut. You never saw these pictures. And so the farmer said that there was definitely an explosion, the plane, even though we have a civilian involved, the plane is taken to a military base for examination for NA, National Auto, Transportation Board. And I tried everything I could to get my hands on that airplane, but they blocked me. Normally, you do not take a civilian airplane to a military base. So that was to control it. I personally, and by the way, they never found the back seat, and they never found Gary Caradore's briefcase, although the pictures were scattered about on the ground. A year later, that deputy sheriff's wife was murdered, so I rather suspect that was a signal for him to keep his mouth shut. Anyway, Rusty had called at Lauren Schmidt that night and told Lauren on the telephone, which was a mistake, Senator, I have the smoking gun. I'm bringing it back with me. Flying out of here at such and such a time. I think that there was a bomb was placed in the plane, and he was murdered, as they do. They are very good at killing people. I mean, that's their profession, one of their professions. Burglaries, killing people. I've had them come into my condominium at night when I'm sleeping and leave subliminal messages in my bedroom when I get up in the morning. So we're dealing with this unbelievable, strong, illegal, criminal government enterprise. You have to understand, Dr. Stan, there's two elements in the government. There's the covert and the overt. The overt are the ones that I belong to when I was in the FBI. That's the guys that go to the bank robbery and ask questions about what the suspects look like. The covert are the ones that are trained killers, assassins, burglars. They recruit these people, these covert operators, from special forces. McVeigh himself was recruited from special forces. He wrote a letter to his sister and told his sister he'd been recruited by the CIA to work on the CIA drug operation.
Now, this is the Timothy McVeigh who was involved in the Oklahoma City bombing.
Right, right.
And have you ever seen a copy of that letter? I've heard of it. I know Representative Keyes says that he has a copy. Do you have a copy of the letter?
No, I don't. I'd like to get a copy of that.
Well, of course, Keyes says he has it. And of course, Timothy wrote to his sister and said he was actually part of a secret special forces unit involved in illegal activity. Terry Nichols has come forward with the same story. There's a book called A Secret Worth Dying For, written by the man who shared the cell block with Timothy McVeigh, and Timothy McVeigh told him. They were all, told them all, he was working for a special unit of the special forces involved in criminal activity, and that was what was behind the Oklahoma City bombing. But, of course, we could never let the American people know that. The book is available on the Internet. I got it from Amazon, A Secret Worth Dying For. So, and then, of course, the other information comes from Jeff Tretado, whose brother was killed in a prison there in Oklahoma City, beaten to death. That, of course, murder was covered up by the government. He actually got this award at $1,250,000 for pain and suffering for the family of the man who was beaten to death, but the government refuses to pay, even though, of course, the judge awarded the money to the family. So, but anyway, of course, it's an incredible story that, of course, that Timothy McVeigh was actually working as an agent of the dark side of government. And well, anybody wants to check that out, the book is available, and we can document the other things. Go right ahead.
Well, it gets better, Dr. Stan, because Terry Nichols has now come forward. He's the co-conspirator of Oklahoma City. Has now come forward with a 19-page affidavit and claims that McVeigh told him that Larry Potts, number two man in the FBI, was the person who coordinated the Oklahoma City bombing. Larry Potts, number two man in the FBI, coordinated the Oklahoma City bombing.
Well, of course, that, I guess, Terry Nichols has said that.
Terry Nichols has said that.
Right, of course. Okay.
And, of course, that's being ignored by the press. But there is an affidavit. That affidavit was filed in the courts in Salt Lake City.
But, of course, you wouldn't expect that information would get out any more than you'd expect the truth about the murder of Martin Luther King, who was actually assassinated by a government hit team. But go right ahead.
Well, and so, anyway, you know, time marches on. We have all these, this situation, it's actually deplorable, it's unbelievable, and the government keeps getting away with it. And now we're looking at candidates like Hillary Clinton and Obama and McCain. I mean, they all belong to the Council on Foreign Relations, CFR.
Well, I don't think that Obama belongs, but he's surrounded by CFR people, and Hillary's surrounded by CFR people, and John McCain belongs to the CFR, so we really don't have a choice, do we?
No, we really don't. I thought that Obama and Hillary were also members.
Not to my knowledge. I could be mistaken. But
I could be mistaken,
but
too.
We do know that they're both, for instance, who is the chief foreign policy advisor for Obama? His name is Zbigniew Brzezinski. Remember the CFR man who organized the Trilateral Commission, and certainly somebody just said my producer is saying that Hillary's been to a Bilderberger meeting. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I'm sure she has. Now, speaking of the Bohemian Grove, right up the street from where you are, Dr. Stan, I have kind of an interesting story. My webmaster, and this may have something to do with my website, tedgunderson.com, being down, and he's also, his name is Chris Jones, he is also webmaster for, I can't think of the ex-police officer from Phoenix offhand, also he's the webmaster for a woman named Linda Cater, and he took a job in the Bohemian Grove here a couple of summers ago and came out with pictures, Chris Jones did, and put them on my website of the various locations, the cottages where they all stayed. But Jack McMahon is the police officer, a former Phoenix police officer. And he put them on there. And also Chris, in addition to being our webmasters, he's a limousine driver. He owns his own limousine. And when he would take police officers, primarily from the Orange County area, in his limousine, and they'd be taking dope and getting drunk and so forth, after he dropped them off, he was calling the watch commander at the police department and telling him what's happening. Anyway, he was recently arrested for child molestation. And I told Chris, I said, look, I will personally testify for you. And I reviewed the police investigation and testified concerning the interrogation techniques and also concerning the report writing and what have you. And in the interviews by the police officers with the children, they're all juveniles, they asked leading questions, they offered their opinions, totally unethical and not professional at all. Now, the worst part about it all is we just had a trial. That's one of the reasons I'm in Southern California. And every one of those boys, there were six boys, every one of them said he never touched them. He never touched them. There was no sex involved. Chris was interviewed by a psychiatrist, and before he would be interviewed by the psychiatrist made him take a polygraph test. He passed the polygraph test. The psychiatrist testified he did not have a propensity towards sexual attraction to children, okay, on the witness stand. He testified to that effect. The children all testified on the witness stand. Chris did not touch them. But the boys would play pull your pants down and little games like that, little kid stuff. And one of the things that happened was when Chris babysat three of these boys, and the father would go to work at 2:30 in the morning. He lived with them, the boys, for 3.5 years. And then Chris would get up in the morning and take them to school and so on and so forth. He got free room and board for doing this. And then, so, now we have a situation where on one occasion in 3.5 years, Chris dealt a strip poker, dealt a hand for strip poker. The boys went down to the boxer shorts, didn't go any further than that. Again, Chris did not touch these boys. One time he played strip poker. Chris was tried and convicted of 3 counts of sexual molestation. Chris just has not been sentenced yet. He's going to be sentenced April the 25th. There's no question about it. The man, his attorney in the middle of the trial, Chris's attorney, told Chris, you're being framed. There we have somebody who dared to step forward in the Bohemian Grove situation, which is where many of our dignitaries and leaders in Washington, D.C. go, including Henry Kissinger, and Nixon's been there in the past, and they have, who knows, they supposedly have a mock human sacrifice, but who knows if it's mock or otherwise. Alex Jones has done an excellent video of the Bohemian Grove.
In fact, we carry that. It's called The Secrets of the Bohemian Grove. We think it's a very important DVD.
But here's a young man, Chris is in his, I'd say, mid-30s, he dared to step forward to try to do something about what's going on, and he's going to go up to prison for probably 15 years. Did not touch those children. So this is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a corrupt government. And the judge and the prosecutor were, in fact, one of our witnesses noticed when the prosecutor entered the courtroom one day, the judge winked at him. I was on the witness stand for over 2 hours, Dr. Stan, as to the techniques used by the police and so on and so forth. And it was kind of interesting because the prosecutor told Chris's attorney the day before that he was going to discredit me. And so he kind of, on cross-examination, he came out, Mr. Gunderson, according to information available to me, you say the FBI was involved in the bombing and the car bombing of the World Trade Center in February 1993. And that, of course, he wanted me to say, I came right back at him and said, yes, that's true. I said, it's in the New York Times article, October 28, 1993. And he went on and talked about Oklahoma City, and he talked about the McMartin preschool case, which I personally worked. And he said, you say there were tunnels under the school. That was a famous case out of Manhattan Beach, California, where the kids were being taken out into the community and prostituted. And there was a 2-year preliminary hearing on it alone. And the prosecutor said, and you say that there were tunnels under the school? I said, no, I didn't say so. I said, I hired an archaeologist. He said there were tunnels under the school. So it was kind of an interesting exchange back and forth. Poor Chris, my heart goes out to him, and I don't know if that's one of the reasons my SedGunderson.com is down tonight. It's been down, it just went down yesterday, and it's still down. I don't know if that's one of the reasons or not, but anyway, I'll get it up as soon as I can. But I thought you'd like to have that little story about the Bohemian Grove and somebody that's tried to expose him and do something about it.
In fact, I met Chris at the conspiracy conference here, I think, about a year ago, and eventually saw his films that were included, I believe, in Alex Jones' update on the Bohemian Grove.
That's right. He did furnish his research to Alex Jones.
Right. And, of course, the thing is, if you you have any weakness at all, they'll come after you with fangs and claws. And, of course, these people are ruthless, and they will target you if they possibly can. And I think it's amazing that Ted has survived all this time trying to get the truth out about the satanic cults that dominate Washington, D.C. And this is really what is so terrible, that the fact that these things exist, the book, the Franklin cover-up, sold 180,000 copies, and yet, of course, never discussed on the media. Now, are you getting much chance to get on television these days to get the information out?
Not really, Dr. Stan. Because of the disinformation about me on the Internet, my lectures have been cut way back. I hardly have any lectures anymore. I have a few radio shows now and then. But believe it or not, the general public, when they read all these nasty things about me on the Internet, a lot of them think it's true. They think, oh, it wouldn't be on the Internet if it wasn't true.
Well, unfortunately, there is a lot of very convincing information, but I have you on because I don't believe that. I believe you're just what you purport to be, and I think it's so vitally important that people understand that this is what happens to people who try to get the truth out. There's an organized effort to discredit them. And I've heard this from so many people, and I just simply say, I don't believe it. Well, Ted, certainly you are certainly doing your... are you working on any cases at the present time?
Yes, I'm working a case involving satanic cults out of Sonoma County, California, and also out of Wisconsin. It's kind of an interesting story. This fellow, a lumberman from Wisconsin, interrupted the satanic ceremony on October 31st, 2004, in the woods in Sonoma, had a gun battle, shot and killed five of them, and he reported to the newspapers. He didn't know if he should report it to the police or not because they're afraid to be charged with murder. He rescued a girl. The girl jumped in the car and took off. She was in the nude. And then he, several months later, two more Satanists came after him in Wisconsin. So that's the case I'm working right now.
All right, fine. Well, is he still alive?
He's still alive. He had a gun battle in Wisconsin. He shot them, too, so.
Well, Chris,
they got away. They had bulletproof vests on.
Well, I think that people have to understand there really are satanic cults. And they really tie into the highest levels of our government until people understand that this is not imaginary. It's really very, very real. And, of course, we are involved in that classic battle between good and evil. Unfortunately, for the present, evil is on the throne. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program here with Ted Gunderson right here at Radio Liberty. Ed, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the programs. Why don't you go ahead?
Well, again, I can't emphasize too much that you people need to buy my DVDs for shipping and handling. They're $3.83 a piece. You can buy 10 of them for $17, and just send me a $20 bill, and go on the internet, one-free-dvd.com, one-free-dvd.com, and pick out your, there's over 400 to choose from, and send the money in. And so I can't emphasize that too much. I urge you folks to send $18 for a copy of Pawns in the Game, which explains the international satanic movement that's taking place in our country and our world today, and also $18 for the book The Franklin Cover-Up, that has sold 180,000 copies without any publicity. By the way, Barnes & Noble and the other major bookstores refuse to carry that book, by the way, Dr. Stan.
I'm not surprised.
And my address is Post Office, Ted Gunderson, $18 on each book, Ted Gunderson, Post Office Box 38, Claytonia, Claytonia, Nebraska, 68328.
One more time, give that address.
Okay. Ted Gunderson, Post Office Box 38, Claytonia, Claytonia, Nebraska, 68328. $18 for each book.
Well, no, is there any chance that Jeffrey McDonald, Captain Jeffrey McDonald, who's been in prison for a crime he didn't commit for 25 years, is going to get another trial? Is there any way to get another judge, of course, an impartial judge?
I doubt it. I doubt it. I don't think so. I think this poor man's... I have other victims. Mike Reconocido is another victim. Look up his website, Michael, R-I-C-O-N-O-S-C-I-U-T-O, Michael Reconocido. You'll find some interesting information there.
And what was he? What was he in for?
He was an agency, a CIA agent for some 20 years. He dared to testify against the Department of Justice with the Brooks Committee here back in the late 1980s. He testified and shortly thereafter was arrested for drugs, tried and convicted, sentenced to 30 years.
Well, of course, we know that they tried to set up a John DeLorean. Of course, it's DeLorean cars that was obviously set up, and John DeLorean was very, very fortunate to get off on that. They set people up, innocent people, and they send them to jail. And, of course, this is the dark side of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And until you understand, of course, that these things really do go on in our country. And, of course, this is why every one of you out there in the audience should be concerned. Ted, thanks so very much. God bless you, and may he protect you.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you've enjoyed our two-hour interview with Ted Gunderson. I think he's a very, very courageous man. I've met Ted many times. I've studied his career, and I believe he's just what he purports to be, and his information is absolutely correct. For instance, one of the richest men in the world was involved with this pedophile ring described in the Franklin cover-up. Another one, his foundation, finances the World Service Group, which is a subdivision of Front for the for the Lucis Trust, which is a Luciferian organization. The New Group of World Service is the name of it. And you go to their website, they've actually taken the Jimmy Carter Foundation down, but they, at least the last time I was there, they had kept up the foundation as a funder, a major funder for the New Group of World Service, foundation for another one of the richest men in the world. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is not imaginary. It's really very real. And, of course, if you want to get to be wealthy, why you go over to the dark side? There's tremendous advantages to it. Only, of course, you'll spend your eternity in hell. And that, of course, is the background of my talk on the forbidden secret. There really is power. There is wealth. There is prosperity. There's notoriety. There's fame there. But, of course, it will cost you your eternal soul. Avoid it like you would the plague. So, again, we hope that many of you want to get my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. My talk on the forbidden secret, our four-tape, or four-CD set on the secret behind the secret. And that is, of course, what Oprah Winfrey and Larry Flynn are actually promoting all across America today. And millions of people are getting roped into this whole idea of the law of attraction. And there's a DVD that sold millions of copies, and a book that sold millions of copies are called The Secret. The Secret. Go up on the internet. You can pull them down. They have a whole network of people all across the world who are involved with The Secret. But what is The Secret? Well, it's exactly the same secret that I warn against in my talk on the forbidden secret. But they're encouraging you to join in this and to meditate and to focus your attention. And by focusing your attention, applying the law of attraction, you'll be able to control the universe. Because, of course, they tell you the ultimate secret, and that is that you are God. And that's exactly what the serpent said to Eve in the Garden of Eden. If you will eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you shall be as God, and you shall never die. And what is the most incredible thing is that there are literally millions of people today are being drawn into this. Of course, we're told in the Second Thessalonians, second chapter, that before the man of sin is exposed, there will be a great falling away of the church. People tell you, you can't lose your salvation. Well, I really tend to disagree with that. I believe millions of people are being drawn away from the Christian gospel by the false leaders out there. We're recruiting them into The Secret, which is why you need to get our fourth tape or four CD set, The Secret Behind the Secret. And then let me suggest that you get our four tape set on the wisdom of Malachi Martin and the book that goes with that, entitled Hostage to the Devil. You get our four tape or four CD set on the supernatural and the book that goes with that, The Beautiful Side of Evil. The Beautiful Side of Evil, written by Johanna Michelson, who is a medium. And then, of course, the book and the four tape set on Satanic Crimes, which, of course, is a rehashing of the book written by Maury Torre on the ultimate evil. And it includes not only that, but a great deal of information on the Bilderbergers. Of course, this most powerful organization, and we know that Bill Clinton has been to the Bilderberger meetings. Apparently Hillary has been to the Bilderberger meetings. And you have to understand that this satanic movement extends into all of our organizations, the CFR, the Trilateral Commission, the Club of Rome, all part of this network of evil. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-89.